Brigadier Daniel, Reel 4. You were talking about some of the more interesting aspects of your time in Africa when you were on leave.
To me, the sight of the wild beasts was incredible. It was after the short rains, so the grass was about 2 foot 6 high. And owing to the enormous number of lions, all the gazelles and the antelopes and the giraffes had all been forced out into the more open glades and were visible. The bush itself was made up of small bushes about 20 foot high. Every bush and every twig had a thorn on it at least 9 inches long, which would penetrate anything. Besides the thorn trees, the other hazard was the rhinoceroses. There were an enormous number of rhinoceroses. They are not peasant animals, and they put one foot in front of the other foot when they walk, and they walk the same way every day to the same place, which is where they had water, and they make a trench along which they walk, and that trench is 4 inches deep and 10 inches wide. Now, a human being cannot walk in that. They fall down. But they are the only means of walking, and you walk along this till you fall down, and you pick yourself up, and you go on. As the day gets hotter, the rhinoceros retires to his favorite bush, just off his track, where he spends the heat of the day. As you pass, he smells the most disgusting smell. He doesn't think of anything except to get rid of it. So he turns round, flashes round very, very quickly onto his path, and down he comes, 2 tons of him at 40 miles an hour. The only thing you can do is to jump into a thorn bush, which is one solid mass of 9-inch thorns. That takes you probably an hour to get yourself removed from this bush with the help of the natives who've all run away. Now, the plan had been for my friend Frank Sparrow to come to India and shoot a tiger, and I would go to Africa and shoot a lion. Unfortunately, I couldn't communicate with him. I had a colonel who was one idea was to get rid of me. Therefore, I arrived in Africa before he'd had the time to come to India to shoot a tiger. And I said, well, now, what about shooting a lion? Well, he said, just wait a few minutes. I have shot all the animals I want to shoot. You are going to shoot for food, for 400 Swahili. You will see more lions in a day than you've imagined in your life. And it's used to shooting one, because what are you going to do with it? There's nobody here who can dry the skin, and nobody who could set it up, and it'll just go bad. And indeed, there were hundreds and hundreds of lions, and you saw them all the time. Zebras and everything else, every other kind of animal. Now, we went pretty well, and we got to the big Maasai encampment. There were 8 corrals. A corral is a circle of thorn bushes and trees inside 4 filthy huts made of untanned hides with some dreadful looking women wearing untied hides. And they're quite young, yet their breasts are down to their knees. And there were, at this, where these wells were, there was one well, and there were 20,000 head of cattle, which the old men owned. There was plenty of grass for them to eat, and there was one well. Now, no Marchi ever does any manual labor. You would think that he would have dug a little passage down to the water where he was, in a well, so two or three cows and two or three cattle could drink at the same time. But no, each one went down one after the other, with the result that they ate up all the grass all around, and so each cow only had water once in every 4 or 5 days, and if it didn't get any water, it died. Now, to show how impossible the Maasai are as a race, before we started, I had two rifles, a heavy rifle and a light rifle. As we started off to walk with Frank, I turned to one of my chief sons and gave him my heavy rifle to carry. Do you know what he did? He put it down on the ground. Now, I didn't notice that for 2 days. And then I said to Frank, "Where do you think my heavy rifle is?" "Oh," said Frank, "you called me. Where did you give it to him?" I said, "I gave it to him just outside your corral, where your hut." "Well," he said, "that's where it is now. They don't carry anything for you." So I said, "Good God." And I had to walk back 2 days to go and fetch my rifle and come back again with it, by which time they waited for me, and we went on. I set out with my tracker every morning at dawn. They came along at their own speed, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they lit a fire. And we looked out for them at 4 o'clock in the afternoon by the sun, as we had no watches, and we saw the smoke of the fire, and however far it was, we walked towards it and hoped to arrive with it before dark. We didn't always be successful. If we were not successful, we had to climb up if there was a tree big enough to take us and tie ourselves into the tree. But if we did fall asleep, we wouldn't fall out and be eaten by the lads who were sitting under the tree. I thought it was amusing to start with, but tiring. We then started to run out of water. Now, this was a very serious thing. No Maasai can understand anybody else's language except his own, which is a series of grunts. We stopped at Maasai and we said, "Where is the next water hole?" His answer was, I'll show you.
Circles.
Circles. Each circle was a day. And he gave you the direction, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days away, as if you could possibly find it in the desert, in the bush, in 4 days. However, we came across a little hole, water hole, about the size of this area here. It was dark yellow, but we decided it must do. There were 400 boys, and Frank and his servants, and he had six Maasai sons, I had six Maasai sons, and ourselves. So we camped, and we drank a little tea, or coffee. Fortunately, I had insisted on bringing a sack of coffee and a sack of meal. Otherwise, we would have starved, because Frank had no idea of these things. And I lay down to sleep. It was dark night. I heard nothing And I woke up next morning at dawn with the most extraordinary smell of hot manure. And I thought, this is rather amazing. And I turned my head to my right, and 6 inches away was a very, very large pile of elephant dung. And by the side of the water was a deep hole, three foot six deep, one hoof mark. The water had disappeared, and in its place was nothing but yellow liquid. An old elephant was on his way trekking south. He knew the water holes. He's a very old elephant, and they don't forget. He had come down, he had found us on either side. He had put his foot 6 inches from my face, but had not touched me. He then drank all the water. He filled his second tank. He got two stomachs, you know, elephants. It held 30 gallons. He filled that, and he then urinated into the hole. So our tea that we had to drink next morning was somewhat tainted with urine. Now, Frank had shot a lot of elephants because he'd been on elephant control. I was mad with joy. The elephant had been 6 inches from me. So one thing I wanted to shoot was an elephant. I was crazy. It start with, it's very easy if you obey the three rules. If you disobey one of the three rules, you die.
And what are they?
Well, I will tell you in a minute. We set off. We took with us pure urine. I had a water bottle full, Frank had one, and we took two boys each, and they had gourds. They filled them with what they could, and our two trackers. And we tracked the elephants. The elephant. There was only one of them. And he wasn't hard to track, because he never, never got outside, out of sight. He stayed always exactly a mile away. And you could see him. And he waited for us under the tree here till we got up and so on. And my trackers came to me and said, "Effendi, do you not find it very quiet here?" And I said, "Yes." I hadn't noticed it, but it is very quiet. "Why?" Well, he said, "There are no birds here. Do you not find that unusual?" And I said, "No, I hadn't noticed it." Well, he said, "Do you know why there are no birds here?" I said, "No, I don't." Well, he said, "There's no water here. And the only person who knows there's no water here is that elephant. And he is going to take you on until you are so weak that he can turn around and he can put one foot on top of you and one foot on top of your friend, and you are both squashed to death." I said, "Thank you for telling me." We went on for the rest of that day. I said to Frank, "We have got to make a decision. There's the elephant, I can see it. And what are we going to do? Now, supposing we do get it, we shoot it and kill it, it's got 30 gallons of water in its second stomach. We're all right. But supposing we don't shoot it, we both die of lack of water." Frank said, "You must decide, Bob. You made me come on this expedition. You must decide." So I said, "We will wait and rest here for 2 hours, and then I'll tell you what I think we'll do." At the end of 2 hours, a little wind got up, and Frank said, "Look out, there's a sandstorm coming." And for 5 hours, the thickest sandstorm I've ever seen in my life came up, and all you could do was kneel on the ground and cover your head and hope that you would survive the sandstorm. Then I said, we'll go home. So we set out and we had 2 days and 2 nights and we had not one drop of water with us. I had never been without water before. I didn't know what it was like. I tied myself to my gun barrel, my shikari, my tracker. And after 2 days, I only thought of one thing. Frank, I'd forgotten about altogether. I thought of putting my left foot somehow in front of my right foot and making 3 or 4 yards further on. Frank had eaten some wild apples that he'd seen in a tree and was desperately ill and unconscious and was lying under the shade somewhere or other. As the night went on, my tracker came to me and he said, you see over there that light? I could not speak. My tongue was hanging out of my mouth. It was pitch black. I couldn't see at all. But I did see occasionally a little flash of light. He said, that is our camp. Well, I said, we'll get there. We did get there. Then we sent the other boys back with a stretcher made with a couple of branches to fetch Frank, and we brought him in unconscious, and we did the usual thing and with a teapot with drops of what was then a little water in the water hole. The urine was not so strong, and we spent 4 days there, and he recovered. But that comes in again. Why I'm telling you about that is a reason. Because, as you will know before you go away from here, that if it hadn't been for that elephant, and if it hadn't been for the fact that I had survived possibly 20 miles without water or so, or 3 or 4 days, I would have died where I stood. So that is why I've told you this, but I don't necessarily put that in a book.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. So, anything else you want to tell me about the time in Africa? Did you actually shoot any rhinoceros, elephants, or lions? Or?
I shot them all. I didn't shoot a rhinoceros because I couldn't. It went too fast. I was always jumping in the bushes of some mass of thorns. I did shoot an elephant because I had to. Because I took my license. I had no money, you see. We didn't have money in Africa. I'd given the man £20 for his truck, and I had no more money. But I had to pay the divisional officer, who was the man I was staying with. I had to pay him £40 for my license, which included one elephant. So I had to shoot an elephant to pay Frank. £40. So later on, I learnt a bit of sense. And I did shoot an elephant. The three rules are this. You never, never, never shoot an elephant that you think is asleep. Because he is not asleep. And he will kill you. You never, ever shoot an elephant if the wind is coming from you to the elephant. Because the elephant knows where you are and he will kill you quite easily. And you never ever shoot an elephant when it has with it a female and young. Because he is a short temper and before you can turn around, you'll be dead. And do you know that every single one of the elephant hunters who took to getting elephants to supply the demand for billiard balls at the beginning of the century in 1900, there were 8 of them, 8 to 12, I think, and they were all dead in a month except one, Sulu, who obeyed the three rules, and he lived to die in his bed. And that is a fact.
So
wanted to know all this.
It's very interesting. How long were you in Africa then?
I had a month's leave, and I was away 10 months. And when I came back, and had
how did you forward your passage back, or did you
just? I came on deck, and I came into the mess. But I got back, and one man looked up, one officer, and said, "Oh, hello, Bob. I thought you'd been eaten by a lion." None of the other officers had noticed I'd gone away. The colonel hadn't noticed I'd been gone. But he knew I had, and he was praying to God that I turned up, because the officer commanding the army in India was visiting his unit within a month. If I wasn't there, he'd ask why, because I knew his son very well.
And so what year were you in? What year were you in?
1926. So it was quite exciting. But we ran out of water hose. We lost a lot of men, and from thirst. We knew that if we went due north, we were bound to hit a river called the Ruvu, but we didn't know how far it was. And if we went another 30 or 40 miles due north, we hit the railway. We knew that. So we dropped everything, let the animals go loose and everything else, and we made for the water. And a certain number of us got there. Frank got there and I got there.
How many of the Ascari?
I didn't count. After we'd been there, the Ruru, for 2 days, an old man came up the bank on the other side of the river and shouted to Frank to ask him if he would shoot a very large bull buffalo that swam over the river when his cows were in season, and the fact of his covering the cow didn't have a calf. So this old Arab prayed that Frank would do this. So Frank and I went down, and we sat on our side of the path with this bull buffalo had made in the ground, waiting for him to come. He didn't come that night, but the mosquitoes did. And although we were covered with blankets, we couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it. And we had to go back to our camp where we could sit in there, smoke, and get some sleep. Next day, I said, "I'm very sorry, Frank, but I must go back. I had a month's leave, and it must be now, I don't know what month it is, but it must be 8 or 9 months since I went away." So Frank said, "All right." I said, "No, you won't go off that bull buffalo, will you?" And he said, "No, I shot all the animals I want to. I don't not shoot any more." I built a bridge across this river, which was full of crocodiles. That if you fell in it, then you lost a leg or your arm, or you lost yourself altogether. And I cut down some saplings, and I made a bridge like that, you know, another one like that, and so on and so on. And next morning, I crossed this bridge, and I took with me four of the chief's sons, and left two behind with Frank. Now, Frank, very stupidly, went after that bull buffalo. This is all hearsay, because nobody knows. I was the outside the river, and on my way to the railway, I had no idea how far it was, 30, 40, 50 miles, and he went after this buffalo, which he should never have done. He wounded it. Now, in Africa, at 3 o'clock, at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, everybody is off hunting, sits down in the shade, and they wait for 3 hours. And in 3 hours' time, the wind changes. Instead of coming from the north, or say it comes from the north, it comes from the south. So you have to sit and wait till the wind changes. And he was sitting behind a bush, and the men he had with him were asleep in front of him. And he said, it's 3 o'clock, and he put his hand down for his rifle like that, and that bull buffalo had gone several miles around and was within 6 inches of his anus, and he hadn't heard it. And it charged him and raked him right up the back and killed him. And then followed the biggest fight you can imagine. The wounded buffalo, a huge beast, was then taken down by Frank's tracker with a short-hand sword. My tracker, the short-hand sword. Chief's sons with spears, 8-foot spears. And two or three Swahilis with knives. That night went on all day. And in the evening, every one of those men was dead, and the buffalo himself was dying. And you won't believe it, but the Englishman, who was 200 miles away, heard of that incident before the moon rose. And he set off straight away to go there. And when he got there, what do you think he found? A big mass of bones. That shows you there is such a thing as thought constitution in those countries.
There would just be two of the chief's sons, would there? Because four of them were with you, you said.
No, two were with me. Frank had two had died, back of water. Frank had four, and my two, he had six. Frank had six. So that buffalo killed six of them, both the hunters, 8, and any others that were knocking about there. I don't know, I wasn't there.
And so you were going back to the coast?
I was going back to the coast.
Well, to the railway.
Well, I shot one of the two very fine heads on my way. And I got to the railway. And I had no idea where I was, except that if I followed the railway, I was bound to get somewhere. But I was very tired. It must have been about 40 miles. And, of course, I had been in meat. But you get to a stage where you can't go on eating meat. You can chew it, and you can take the substance out of it and then spit it out. You've got to eat it. No animal in African has any fat on it, except a giraffe. And if you shoot a giraffe, you have to pay a fine of £600. I shot a young giraffe that didn't say anything to Frank, because I could not bear this meat anymore. But anyway, by luck, as we were sitting on the railway line, wondering what to do, well, anything we could do except sit there, one of these railway runners came down the line with 4 enormous Negroes. And they were 2 on each side, and they were pulling, you pull the thing down this side, and then you pull the thing down that side.